Now taxes is 100% free when you file in the TurboTax app if you didn't file with us last year.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah. Just do your own taxes in the app by 2/18.
What if I have lots of forms?
All good. All 100% free.
What if I had three jobs?
Still 100% free.
What if I once saw Bigfoot?
That has nothing to do with taxes, so still 100% free.
Now that's what I'm talking about.
Now this is taxes. See if you qualify in the TurboTax app. Excludes TurboTax Live. Must start and file in app by 2/18.
You're listening to Power Athlete Radio, a podcast dedicated to empowering your performance every damn day. Join former NFL pro and Power Athlete founder John Wellborn as he dissects the greatest minds in strength, conditioning, and more. So whether your goal is to be the hammer, destroy mediocrity, or simply move the dirt, you've come to the right place. Now with the warm-up done, let the gains begin.
Dude, I can't believe you're from Walnut Creek. We didn't put two and two together.
Yeah.
And that you went to De La Salle.
He's like, oh, yeah. He's Johns from California as well. I was like, oh, shit, I didn't know that.
Yeah. No, I grew up in Palos Verdes.
Yeah.
And, you know.
Oh, really?
Yeah. PB Torrance area.
I have a bunch of buddies from Palos Verdes.
Yeah. I went to Peninsula. I went to Palos Verdes and I went to Peninsula and graduated there.
Yeah.
And then obviously went to Cal.
Yeah.
And then went on to that.
It's wild to think back on, like, okay, like how all these guys' lives played out. Like, because, you know, Mike Bussinelli, superstar quarterback, and all that. And then his starting running back was Leon Callen, who went to Arizona, I think. He was a stud.
Where was this at? De La Salle?
Yeah. Okay. And then.
So for those of you guys not list or not in the know in terms of California high school football
or national
or know. National football, yeah. High school stuff in terms of like the most winning organizations, the most winning team, you know, high school on the planet is De La Salle.
Yeah.
And so growing up in Southern California, we played in, you know, obviously CIF. I played against all these, you know, major teams. I mean, and then like Long Beach Poly was bigger than us.
So they modern were day also.
Yeah. Modern day. They were in like the next division up, but you'd always see Cal High Sports would always have like, you know, De La Salle. And then when I went to Berkeley, we had a bunch of De La Salle players, and that's where I met, you know, Nate Gelderman, who you know.
Yeah, Cal heavily recruits out of De La Salle. My brother is a soccer player. He got recruited to Cal. He went pro. That's like Cal goes to De La Salle, recruits players.
So what's wild that you bring up Bassanetti. Is it Bassanetti?
Bassanelli.
Yeah, Bassanelli.
Yeah.
He was in the car with Daryl Russell. Mm-hmm. And so little known fact, D. Russ, who played defensive tackle at USC, we were going down to play them, and we hadn't beat SC at home in the Coliseum in like 100 years, right? Mm-hmm. Like forever. So we go down there. That's the year we had Mariucci. We were on fire. We go down, and the week before he, you know, that game is coming up, he gets popped by the NCAA on that sneaker sellback deal. So for those who don't know, before the NIL, there was different deals that teams had or, you know, universities had. So when I took my trip to SC, the guys told me they're going to give you like 10 pairs of shoes. You can take those extra shoes back to Foot Locker and sell them back. And like, this was a pretty common deal that those guys are doing. I don't know what happened, whether or not he was an asshole, fucked somebody over, did something, but somebody reported him. He ends up getting popped and he can't play in the game.
Shit. Probably over like $500.
Yeah. So we go down there and we end up fucking winning. And he comes over to me after me. He's like, this game wouldn't, have, you know, this would have ended different if I had played.
You're like, so stop cheating, dude.
Well, I told him, I was like, coulda, shoulda, woulda, if only.
Yeah.
Right. And then he's like, I'll see you in the NFL. And I was like, all right, you fat motherfucker. Mm-hmm. So he ends up leaving that year, going to the NFL. I come a couple years later and never got a chance to play against him because he got into like, you know, he was doing drugs in the city, got in, was in and out, went in and out. And then he ends up dying in that car wreck. I mean, he had to be in his 20s.
Yeah. I mean, Bassanelli's 29. I can't imagine he was like much different than that. Wait, so when he got, did he pop hot in the league for like on a test?
No, I think he must have. So he was a first round draft pick in 97. God, he was, he was 29. So he got into a bunch of run-ins with law enforcement and myriad of drug suspensions. So he was going out to like all these different clubs in San Francisco and doing a bunch of XC and just got involved in a weird crowd. And then it's pretty difficult to get popped for recreational drugs in the NFL. So there's like a window of a couple months where they know like, hey, they're going to come test you for street drugs. And it's in that off season. So guys know the window. So guys have been smoking and doing drugs all season.
They just kick for 30 days and they're like,
and they know they're fine. And then as soon as you get tested, you're done until next year. And then guys can go back and party.
Yeah.
To the point where I had one teammate that used to pick me up in Kansas City and we'd drive to work just so he would drive his car, come in, get in the passenger, I would drive so he could smoke before practice. you know, and I'm not a marijuana guy.
It's me neither.
That's not my deal at all. No. You know, give me something that makes me sharper, more intelligent. Same. Like what was the drug? Limitless.
Oh, Limitless. Give it to me.
Yeah, give it to me all day. And you know, if you said I only got 10 years, I'm taking it. Right. So, but yeah, he got into a bunch of drug stuff, and he never got back to the league. And you know, I never got a chance to play against him. And then he passed away, which is an awful thing. But I would have liked to have fucking beat up his fat ass.
Yeah, it's crazy how like. When guys get kind of strung out on stuff, it's so rare for people to come back from that and put it back together, especially like in the NFL, you know, or something where if you get off track, like you can't be off track for 3 fucking years and then try to come back and have your career happen again, you know. In mixed martial arts, sometimes guys can get strung out on painkillers specifically from injuries, and then they can kick those. I've noticed that particular substance is actually pretty easy for people to come back from the kick, and it's like their brain is back on. Yeah. It's fucking hard to get off, but you can just get off.
A lot of guys in the NFL were hooked on painkillers.
For sure.
I remember when I retired from the NFL, I ran into one of my buddies who I played with the Chiefs, and he's like, how's retirement going? Everything. And he's like, was it hard to kick the pills? And I'm like, no, I didn't take the pills. He's like, what? I'm like, yeah, I just never took the pills. Like the pain never bothered me the same way that some of you guys are. He's like, man, I was taking anywhere from like 17 to 20 of those things a day. It took me a couple years to get off of them. I mean, the infamous story about Brett Favre was they went to a dinner, like a team dinner, and he was like going around bumming pills off of guys, and he sat there and was popping them. All of a sudden, he hadn't eaten anything. He throws the pills up between his legs during the dinner, and he picked was picking them out of the vomit to put them back in his mouth. And I think some guys were in there like, yo, dude, you got a fucking problem.
Yeah, bro, that's...
But that was, you know, I mean, guys would... You know, spend the whole offseason collecting pills because they knew they needed a certain amount. The thing that I didn't like about the painkillers, especially playing on the painkillers. So the year that I took a helmet to the shin, broke my fibula clean in half. they casted me 5 days. I played 3 weeks later, played 17 weeks on a broken leg.
So, wait, they broke the clean through?
Yeah, so my fibula, the non-weight-bearing bone, only 12% weight-bearing, basically broke side by side.
Oh, the small one on the side?
Yeah. So they casted me. I came back 3 weeks later, played.
Did they plate it or what?
No. We interrupt this episode with a shameless self-promotion. Are you a field or court sport athlete looking to dominate the leaderboard? Let me introduce you to Field Strong. Take your inner athlete to the next level by exposing yourself to the advanced training techniques that contributed to my 10 years in the NFL. Unlock pinnacle performance and level up your athletic potential today. Head to powerathletehq.com/fieldstrong and claim your 7-day free trial. Now back to the show. No, they just said, hey, it's going to move.
Keep your weight on the inside of your leg?
No, just if you can suffer through it, we'll be okay. We won't run to your side.
Okay.
And the first game back, the doctor goes and he's like, hey, I want you to take one of these. So he gave me a painkiller. And I was super looped. Like I was sitting on the sidelines and I was kind of like, man, like this all feels real surreal. And I remember thinking like, this isn't a good state to play in.
Yeah.
But then there's a great video of Aaron Rodgers post game where he hurt his knee pretty bad. And then they took him in and they gave him a bunch of shit and shot him up. And then he was getting interviewed and he's like, you know, eyes are big and his pupils are like this. And he's, I mean, it's pretty easy to find on YouTube, but that was pretty standard practice back in the day. And then after the games, when you get on the plane, they would hand you a lunch sack with like sandwiches and give you 2 beers. And so then we would sit down and you'd like, you were either a beer guy or a pill guy. And then the doctor would come by and he would have like pills in a, like a pill box, like a, you know, paper pill box. And they would shake them when they came by and they sounded like rattlesnakes. And so we called them rattlers and like, you guys need any pills? Need any pills? And they would just come and certain guys would get pills. Other guys would be like, I'll trade you a beer for a pill. And we had this kind of like weird prison style like deal. I just sit there and have a drink and, you know, hang out with Runyon and drink some deal. But the guys that would take pills would fucking collect those things.
Oh, for sure. Yeah. I know more about this particular topic than is probably healthy, but the people with biological kind of predisposition to the pills, I could tell you one with literally 100% accuracy, which of the three types a person's going to be, like, which is going to be the addict, because they fall into three categories. First one is people puke, like you give them painkiller. Like there's tons of people who take a Vicodin and they're like, oh my God, they just make me throw up. Now, obviously that's never gonna happen there. Second one gets tired and loopy. Third one, they get energy. Energy one, addict. It's a biological thing.
Yeah.
Like for,
so for me, it's like getting hit me with a ninja blow dart, like a hammer in the head. I get real tired, real loopy. But type two. But I saw other people, like you said, take them and they were like uppers.
Yeah.
I mean, same thing with marijuana. I mean, exactly. I've seen people smoke and like all of a sudden they're bouncing off of walls, and I've seen other people smoke and they end up like, you know, a potted house plant.
I will have an anxiety attack.
You?
Yeah.
No.
I don't understand that either. But for me, I don't get anxious about stuff. If I smoke weed, it's like, oh, there it is. Like, there's the overwhelming panic of any situation that I'm in. I never smoke weed. Mm. Gives me massive paranoia that I never have for any other reason. but yeah. And on the pills though, I am type three, where you give me those and I'm like, whoo, they make me better at everything initially, you know, but it's a slippery slope.
But that means, you know,
that's why I can't take them
yeah.
ever. It's just can't take them.
Yeah. I just didn't take them just for the mere fact that when they did give them to me, I couldn't feel my hands. Mm-hmm. So when I started punching people and hitting people, I felt like I was just like unleashing whatever I had. And I would hit them as hard as I can. And all of a sudden the next morning I get up and I couldn't open my hands.
Yeah.
Like my fists were broken. My hands were all bruised. And I remember being like, yeah, that's not a good thing. If I got like numb jackhammers, I'm going to fuck my hands up.
Yeah.
And I remember getting up one morning and like running my hands under hot and cold water, just trying to get them to do this because I'd bruised my palms so bad. And I remember thinking like, I ain't taking this shit anymore.
Yeah.
This episode of Power Athlete Radio is powered by Train Heroic, the most immersive strength training app experience on the market. We've built an online training business by partnering with Train Heroic to deliver all of our world-class training programs like Jack Street, Hammer, Field Strong, and Grindstone. To learn which Power Athlete training program best suits your goals, head to powerathletehq.com/training. And if you're a coach looking to build a business with the best training tech in the business, head to trainheroic.com/powerathletehq. And now back to the show.
Dude, I remember so everybody knew Favre had the pill thing. And then I can't remember exactly what game it was, but I remember this was the season after he had gotten off, and something had happened where he had gotten banged up in a game. And then in the second half, he came out and played absolutely lights out, brought them back. They won the game, and he like broke down crying in the presser. And I remember looking and I'm like, I bet you they gave him painkillers at halftime. That's why he's crying. It's because like he needed him to perform, like, cause he'd been playing like shit. He got banged up and then boom, all of a sudden he's back. And it's like, he probably cracked, took the painkillers, and then boom, look at that. Now he's like, you know, because it wasn't like crying tears of, I got off the pills and I made it. It was like, I can tell the difference. Like, he was deeply upset, you know? He's got something going on right now, doesn't he?
Yeah, he got into some weird lawsuit where allegedly they were taking, I guess he got cash payments to try to get some basketball, volleyball thing built in Mississippi, and it was supposed to be money used for some project that got diverted, and they were used. I read up a little bit about it when it popped, just because I, you know, played against Brett and always respected him as a player. I mean, I felt bad that he was the type of dude, like, he was better on the painkillers. And I knew players like that.
Yeah.
I knew guys that were like, dude, give him his fucking go-go juice or whatever it is. It could be a Toradol shot. It could be a painkiller. And guys played way better. But I always loved the way he played. I mean, the fact that, you know, did you see that interaction with him and what's his name? The Jets defensive lineman, Mark Gastineau. You know, so Gastineau had the NFL sack record.
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, obviously Strahan picked it up off of Brett Favre, and that kind of little deal rolled out straight out and kind of went for the sack, and Favre just went down. And they figured it was a gimme, which it probably was. You know, I mean, Favre and Strahan probably are obviously friends, and was like, oh, you know what? I see him coming. I'm going to give him this one. And Gastineau like got all mad at Favre and like, you know, you took my sack, you stole my record. And I'm just like watching this poor old man complaining about shit that happened like 20 years ago, like it was yesterday. And you're like, dude, give it up. Like, so, like, records are there to be broken.
It was going to fall. Yeah. That record's going to fall.
Well, and on top of it, because Gastineau refused to ever play the run or do anything other than rush the passer, he'll, you know, guys didn't like him. He wasn't a good teammate. He won't make the Hall of Fame. And so he's out there doing this, and you're like watching him, and you're like, he's in the throes of whatever the fuck brain injury this thing is. And it's a sad deal.
Dude, have you seen, like, let me ask you something different. So you played in how many Super Bowls?
I did not play in any Super Bowls.
I
played in three NFC Championship games.
Okay. So when you get to NFC Championship games, how different is the, like, the week leading into the game? How, like, obviously I assume you try to keep everything the same and make it feel like any other game, but yeah. Like, what does it feel like leading into a game that big?
There's a lot of preparation for the Super Bowl, because if you win on that Saturday or that Sunday, the next day you're back, you go to meetings, you pack all your shit, and you're on a plane that night to wherever the Super Bowl is. So, you know, like now with like, they have that entire kind of like news media week where they want to get you in and they want to get you to all the media people. So they get you down. So you go into that NFC Championship game thinking that you're going to the Super Bowl because you've bought tickets, you got hotels, you got family and friends. Like, you've made all the arrangements as if you're going
to
win.
Because you have to.
Well, yeah, right? Because you can't make it after. Yeah, so like we had to buy hotels. So we ended up losing three times and we had all these like tickets and hotels and all this shit for our family. So we just end up going to the Super Bowl. Yeah. And then we had a great time there, you know, because you get to go to the parties and hang out and have a lot of fun. But no, I mean, there's a sense of urgency. So in the NFL, like the preseason is like, let's say it's like one speed and then you get to the first game and the speed's here. And then over the course of the season, it actually increases. But then you get to like the Q4. Like, you know, like the, you know, when it gets cold in the NFL is when shit gets real serious.
Yeah.
Like, nobody that goes to the Super Bowl is not successful and doesn't have momentum in the second half of the season.
Yeah.
And really, more importantly, that like fourth quarter of the season. So like, you know, that's like November, December, like you got to get momentum.
Yeah.
So the teams I played on in Kansas City, Philadelphia, we were real fucking good. So we had a ton of momentum, you know, all of a sudden we get the first round bye into the playoffs. And we went into the NFC Championship games expecting to win these games. I mean, the year we lost to Tampa Bay, I mean, we'd already beaten Tampa Bay. Mm-hmm. And just by a absolute fucking fluke of existence, those guys win. And it's a shitty deal, you know. Yeah. But like the speed in which the playoffs happen, and then the speed in the playoffs kind of ratchets it up. You get to the NFC Championship game and every fucking play is like live one-on-one going 100 miles an hour. Everybody's trying to kill everybody. So it's a fun game to play in because the level of like the sense of urgency and the level of competition is really high.
Yeah. Playing line, conditioning has to be incredible, I would imagine, by then.
Yeah. I mean, but what's wild is everybody's in game shape. I remember we had a bye kind of late in the season and they asked us to redo the conditioning tests during the bye week. And like the majority of people failed, but everybody was in game shape. So it just goes to show you that like game shape and sprinting and running shape. But the one thing that you have a good consistency on is it's kind of like jiu-jitsu. You're just very conservative, or not conservative, but just very efficient in what you do.
Yeah.
It's like rolling with Shanji, right? Like, go to roll with Shanji and at the end of 5 minutes, I'm absolutely smashed and he's not even sweating.
Yeah.
And I felt like I've done all the work and he's done nothing. Yeah. That same similar deal happens where you just get real efficient in your movement, everything. There's no wasted motion.
Yeah.
You're not moving more than you need to. You're not doing a bunch of extra bullshit and you're just much more surgical is the word I give.
Shanji described his kind of progression in jiu-jitsu as he's always thought of himself as lazy. He's like, I think of myself as lazy, so I wanted to be able to use the least amount of energy possible. And I thought about that. I'm like, man, that's kind of brilliant for this, because it's one of those things where like, if you do the technique correctly, you don't need to use a bunch of energy, you know? Yeah. Like if I go, you know, if I'm rolling with someone who's doesn't actually matter, they can be much stronger than me, but they're super new. Like I don't need to use energy at all. And I put myself in this position. I'm like, go ahead and flounder around, dude. I'm just waiting for you to do that. Oh, you did it. All right. And then now go ahead, do this. I'm just waiting for you. Oh, you did it. And now Shanji does that and then simultaneously makes himself feel like he's 5,000 pounds on top of you at the same time.
So for those of you guys that don't know, Jesse and I trained together at Six Blades and that's how we became friends, not realizing now we're both from California. And more importantly, like the Jesse on fire, which I would like to get into with the YouTube stuff.
Sure.
But yeah, we started doing jiu-jitsu. We're both shitty blue belts. You got 4 stripes. I got 2. So he moved faster than me. And it's fun because you get to go in and we train in a pretty amazing environment with Shanji and Philippe and the guys and Victor and
bunch of world champions.
Yeah, I mean, like you walk in and there's 10 Brazilians in the room. Whenever I hear people talk about their jiu-jitsu experience and more importantly, training at their gym and this, I'm like, oh, you guys don't have 10 Brazilians that are there on comp visas that are looking to try to kill people.
Yeah.
Or like, you know, 18-year-old kids from Manaus from the Amazon that are looking to choke the shit out of you in ways that you've never found.
You don't have a combined 20 world champions or 20 world champions among like 3 or 4 guys in your, the caliber of our professors is ridiculous. Ridiculous.
Yeah. No, so it's deep waters.
Yeah.
But it makes jiu-jitsu fun because if you ever get a chance to go roll with anybody else, it's a unique style that I haven't seen. mm-hmm. you know? But I do enjoy, whenever I roll with Shanji, it's always an awakening of like, how do I survive this and like try to make it to the end of this journey without getting fucking absolutely raped?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it's, and he, so the very first time that I ever rolled with him, I was a white belt. I hadn't been.
Did you do JIT somewhere else than you came here?
I did a little bit. Yes, actually. So before I moved to Texas, I did a little bit. Then I did a year at Gracie Baja. Then I came to Six Blades.
Where'd you move before this?
I was at Gracie Baja.
All right, but where did you guys live?
Oh, in California. I was at a Caesar Gracie gym in Pleasant Hill.
Oh.
Gracie Fighter.
Okay, and then you moved from Northern California out here to Austin.
Exactly, yeah. Yeah, so, but the very first time that, this is going to sound like gibberish to people who don't know jiu-jitsu, but the first time that I did this, he just put me in spider guard and then just sat there. And I was like this. And I remember thinking to myself like, dude, this dude could literally do anything he wants with me. Like, I'm like, what do you call this? The Pinocchio, you know? Cause I was like,
yeah.
And I've felt a million people do spider guard since then. I've never felt even remotely in the same category of how helpless he made me feel just like that. Like, I mean, I'm certain it would feel exactly the same right now, regardless of how much better I've gotten, but mm-hmm. his spider guard is something different. He's so good at making his weight feel twice as heavy as he actually is.
Yeah. He's made of antimonium.
Yeah.
Or what's the word?
Adamantium.
Yeah. Adamantium.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. So that's my joke that Shanji's bones have adamantium in them and that he weighs fucking as much as Wolverine.
It doesn't make any sense how heavy he feels.
Yeah. So imagine this. Your entire life, you've been obviously doing jiu-jitsu and you have his brother Salo, who's, you know, obviously a complete lunatic in many ways. I mean, the stories of Salo are hilarious, mm-hmm. But just an absolute killer. And that's your brother. And then you have a training group with him and Lovato. So it's Lovato and Shanji and Salo in this like training group, like somewhere in Ohio. And they teach seminars and all they do is jiu-jitsu. And they just basically just fostered this incredible thing and have this like incredible team of individuals in this. And it's all they did, mm-hmm. right? They didn't get degrees. They didn't study. They didn't like when I asked Shanji, when I had Lovato on the podcast, I'm like, those days, what did you guys do? He's like, we did jiu-jitsu. And when we weren't doing jiu-jitsu, we were at the house talking about jiu-jitsu and watching jiu-jitsu and VHS. It's all we did. It was our entire existence. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, for a lot of those guys to immerse themselves in it is, kind of like modern day samurais where they've just mastered the warfare.
The only thing that I can think of in modern society that's similar at all is like the early surfers that would move to Hawaii and they're like, oh yeah, I'm going to surf. You're all, what do you mean you're going to surf? They're like, that's what I'm going to do with my life. Surf. You're like, what are you going to do for money? It's like, we'll steal pineapples and shit. Like that's, you know what I mean? It's like the money is like not really effective. Cause everybody knew people, the current state guys who are just jiu-jitsu athletes now at least have a pathway to making like some money. Mm-hmm. But there's no UFC belt at the end of the jiu-jitsu rainbow until literally so recently now. Yeah,
like CGI.
Yeah.
And ADCC. Mm-hmm. And even at the ADCC, they didn't make terrible amount of money.
No, you make $10,000.
Yeah. But what those guys do is they create a legacy that allows them to go teach seminars and put out videos. And so the ancillary, they could make money. Mm-hmm. You know, BJJ fanatics or whatnot, but really the CGI was the first time that they had a major purse.
Yeah.
And those guys could actually make money at doing it. But it's pretty interesting to see how dedicated these guys are. Mm-hmm. It's the same dedication we put into the NFL. It was just the stakes were a little bit higher and I had more opportunities to fight.
Yeah. Yeah. And I mean, team sports versus single individual sports is just super different in what you're, I mean, on a team sport, you fuck up. Your whole team fails, you know, like, which in my, like, it's just as much pressure to perform. Sometimes you can make a big mistake and it can get kind of swallowed up and no one notices where, you know, in a single sport, it is 100% on you. It just takes a very, very certain type of personality to really strive and become a world champion as an individual athlete. You mm-hmm. know what I mean? Like mm-hmm. these people are, they're fucking crazy. Like in a way that works in that one way, you know, like Djokovic or whatever, you know, the tennis guy, mm-hmm. fucking Shanji, you know, these guys that literally are just champion, 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 generation after generation after generation. It's just, they're just built different. You know, Alex,
Pereira.
No. Alex at Six Blades, really, really sharp with people. And he talked to me about it. He's like, Salo and Junji, they're different. He's like, it takes a very different type of, you know, competitor to do what these guys do. He's like, they're not self-deprecating at all. He's like, they are fucking champions. That's just what they are. And you're like, the proof is in the pudding. Shanji won world titles from like, I can't remember what his first one was. Like, I think 2006. And he just won Europeans in 2026. And he's won, you know, all the way, you know, ADCC, all that. It's bananas, dude.
Well, they were early adopters. Mm-hmm. And two, if you listen to the lineage of how they got into it, you know, he starts training and he goes to Rio and like, you know, like they just happen to be in the right place. It's kind of similar. I was on a podcast recently for a guy named Judd Leinhardt, mm-hmm. and he asked me about being involved in CrossFit back in the early days. And, you know, now people are kind of viewing CrossFit. I'm like, I was there in, you know, not in the infancy, but pretty close, you know, teaching a seminar 2008, 2009. Like these people are talking about things. Like I went to Glassman's house and hung out with him and his wife and to see this thing kind of in its infancy. Mm-hmm. And like now you're having people look at this thing over 15 years later, 16 years later, and they're trying to like make assertions about it. And you're like, well, you missed it. You weren't there. Mm-hmm. And I look at a lot of the jiu-jitsu stuff of these guys, you know, training. Like I rolled with that black belt Ash the other day. I mean, he started in 2002. I think he trains at Tim Kennedy's gym, black belt. I rolled with him on, we were at open mat on Friday.
Oh yeah.
Right. So like he told me he's got like 23 years doing jits.
Yeah.
I mean, that's pretty interesting. Cause when I got exposed to jiu-jitsu in the 90s, like it wasn't anything that was overly appealing to me. So yeah. I'm pretty amazed that like people have been in it and kind of seeing this maturation process.
Yeah.
And what's exciting now is these guys are, you know, and I wonder if it's the rise of the UFC ties to it. Because, you know, I mean, obviously like when the UFC started, there was what, like four a year. And now I feel like there's like one every fucking weekend.
There is basically one every, but it probably averages 3.5 a month.
Yeah. And, I mean, just the quality of fighters and what the thing I'm amazed by in the UFC is I didn't think there was that many guys
so many now,
but when the UFC started and we watched it, like, I remember there was only a few people that could do this thing. And I always remember being like, I wonder if they'll ever have enough fighters to be, you know, people are skilled enough to put on a good show and be able to do this every month.
Yeah.
And now, I mean, sometimes they're doing, you know, two in a week.
Yeah.
So, I mean, they have the fighters.
Yeah, they definitely have the fighters. And there's certain skill sets that you absolutely have to be able to fight at the top level. And it's like, you have to have striking, you have to have grappling, you have to have jiu-jitsu, because even... unless a guy is such an insane wrestler that they can stay off their back their entire career, because you put a wrestler on their back, like they don't have any skills.
No, they're turtles.
They don't have any skills. So like you have, jiu-jitsu is one of those things that those guys all have to train. And jiu-jitsu is also one of those things where you can pick it up at any time. Like I think that there's this biological wiring in, I don't know about most, but lots of men, it's still a tribal warrior thing that's literally genetically hardwired into your brain. And most people, once they get out of high school, they're not playing sports anymore. They might, you know, they might do like fraternity sports in college or whatever, but there's a certain age where they're not doing anything anymore. And so those people become fanatical fans of a sports team because they have no outlet for it. So they're like, I am this fan, and when there's a fucking pass interference call, I will throw a glass through my wall because I care. That I think that's that like pent up thing that's just inside of him. Jiu-jitsu is like this thing where you can insert that into someone's life at any age, and it's like, okay, that's gone now. Now I can feed. I can do this. There's no like if someone gets that serious about like a fucking softball league, you're like, bro, relax. You know what I mean? Like, why don't you just relax? It's softball.
Dude, I coach my son's, he's eight, mm-hmm. third grade. So flag football. Yeah. I coach flag football. Some of these dads are
that
they're pretty fucking into it.
Yeah.
And, you know, the hilarious part is, even though I played offensive line, I don't really know like a ton of like, I mean, I know plays and shit offenses, but I know defenses cause it's all we read. Mm-hmm. So I get to be their defensive coordinator and these kids like have the most fun. I'm like, dude, running wheel blitzes and doing all this stuff. I want you to run here and do this. And, the kids have a blast.
Yeah.
But some of these dads are out there with like, you know, iPads and they're super fucking into it.
Yeah.
And, they're always like, you know, I'm excited for these kids to have, like to have fun. And then like our leading tackler, I give $5 to. So I call it the early NIL. And I'm like, here's your deal. Here's your early NIL. $5. Tell your mom I gave you $5 so she doesn't know where this came from, or she doesn't think this came from somewhere. And so like one of the moms is like, did you give him $5? I'm like, it's early NIL. Yeah. We got to get him ready. And but people are into it, man. I mean, you know, being an Eagles or sorry, playing for the Eagles, I didn't realize the level of like just weirdness that are Eagles fans. I love them to death because those people were so dedicated and like truly at their word of fanatic. Mm-hmm. Like people are Eagles, like to the point where I can't tell you how many Eagles tattoos I've had, or I've seen that guys have rolled up their sleeve and had a Birds tattoo. Mm-hmm. How like into this thing they are, their entire life is built around Eagles football, and like they're into it, and this is who they are, and this is what they do. And then they ask me and I'm like, I just put on the uniform and get to go out and play.
Yeah.
And it's pretty interesting, but I'm sure the same thing happens in jiu-jitsu where people go deep and then people get into MMA, they go deep and they just like obsessed with these things.
Yeah. Yeah. The jiu-jitsu thing I think is the other thing too, I've noticed is like my theory on this also came from just observing my own, like how dialed in am I to the 49ers? I was a huge 49ers fan forever until McDaniel went to the Dolphins, but like,
and then you became a Dolphins fan.
And then I became a Dolphins fan. It's different when you fucking, your friend is the coach, man. Like, cause as soon as he went there, I was like, I wonder if I'm going to be able to care equally about the Dolphins and the Niners. I've been a Niners fan since I was.
So was he the Niners offensive coordinator?
He was the running. Well, first he was the running game coordinator at the same time. They had a passing game coordinator who was what's his name's little brother.
Yeah.
And then.
Which isn't uncommon.
Yeah. Shanahan really, he kind of fucked him over, dude. Do you remember that when what the hell is his last name?
Kyle Shanahan.
No, not Shanahan. The passing game coordinator, his brother's the Packers coach.
LaFleur.
So LaFleur got the Green Bay gig, and he wanted to take his brother Mike over to Green Bay. Kyle like didn't allow him to take him or something like that. Like there was he did something where he didn't allow him to take him. And then the next year he basically elevated McDaniel to basically be running the offense. And he put LaFleur with the quarterbacks. And then the next year, like LaFleur left. So he didn't end up getting to take the offensive coordinator job for his brother, which I don't know. I don't know the ins and outs of it, but I remember just being like, it's kind of fucked up, man. It's his brother. And you have another coordinator, and then you're just going to put the other coordinator into the coordinator job?
I'm surprised that Shanahan survived after what happened at the Niners this year. I mean, you know, the Niners were a lot of people's pick to be back in the Super Bowl.
Yeah.
And to see them absolutely, literally auger in the side of the mountain and crater, I thought that thing would have fallen firmly on his shoulders.
It's pretty rough. It's not like they had, I mean, unless I'm forgetting, it's not like they had any like catastrophic injuries. Well,
they had Christian McCaffrey was out.
Oh, yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
So he had all whatever his weird Achilles, you know, injuries he had.
Yeah.
So he was out. And then was it Deebo Samuel?
He wasn't injured.
I thought he was injured. The receiver was injured.
He wasn't injured the whole year. I mean, like, because I'm pretty sure I had Samuel on my fantasy team. And okay.
But I know McCaffrey was out, but then also, and I was laughing that they hired Robert Saleh, you know, the fired Jets coach.
Oh, yeah.
As a defensive coordinator. And there were some funny memes about him coming back and then being like, we're going to be unstoppable. And then seeing the Bosa brother, like rolling his eyes.
It's a rough year for the Niners.
Yeah, it's going to be rough. And, you know, John Lynch, he was, you know, I played against John numerous times in Tampa, played in a celebrity golf tournament and was friends with him. So I'm excited to see that he got in the front office to run it. I just wonder if he's making some good decisions.
Yeah, he's been there for a while. I met him when McDaniel was there. And I mean, that McDaniel took, I'm trying to think who else McDaniel definitely took Wes Welker with him to the Dolphins. He took Wes Welker was the receivers coach at the Niners.
And I played with him in at the Patriots.
He's a stud.
Yeah,
his wife is a smoke show too.
Yeah, it's pretty rare to run into NFL players that aren't married to pretty girls.
That's a fair point. Yeah, but I mean the Dolphins this year. That's one of those ones where you're like, bro, you want to talk about a guy justifying his contract? Tua gets this massive contract, gets injured, and they literally score 4 touchdowns in what like 5 games or something while he's out. That was rough.
I can't believe they paid Tua.
You think?
I can't believe I would never pay that kid.
That's a lot of dough.
It's a lot of dough for somebody that it has, you know, I mean, he's kind of a China doll. I mean, not to rip on the dude in this, but like, I mean, you look at the hits Tom Brady took in his, the first 10 years of his NFL career, any one of those hits would have ended Tua's fucking life. Like the hits he was taking were like, I was surprised. I mean, dude, just go back. Like you can go back on YouTube and put in like Tom Brady big hits first part of, his NFL career for 10 years. That dude played against Junior Seau. I mean, that was when they did not protect quarterbacks. And now Tua's out there, tries to scramble, like falls down and gets hit. And next thing he's fucking KOI. I mean, it's... KOA. It just was surprising. Like somebody, and there's no shame on that dude, but I wouldn't invest in somebody that wasn't that durable. I mean, the NFL,
200 million.
The NFL is all about durability. And to be able to play that many games and to be able to play in big games and, you know, big quarterback. I mean, you know, obviously I'm super sad for Josh Allen. God, that was a fucking weird game, wasn't it?
Now taxes is 100% free when you file in the TurboTax app if you didn't file with us last year.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah. Just do your own taxes in the app by 2/18.
What if I have lots of forms?
All good. All 100% free.
What if I had three jobs?
Still 100% free.
What if I once saw Bigfoot?
That has nothing to do with taxes, so still 100% free.
Now that's what I'm talking about.
Now this is taxes. See if you qualify in the TurboTax app. Excludes TurboTax Live. Must start and file in app by 2/18.
I mean, I was hoping, I mean, as obviously I played for both teams, I played for the, you know, the Birds and I also played for the Chiefs. And I always enjoy watching the Chiefs win, but I had wanted Josh Allen to come in with like a big kind of Brady-esque chip on his shoulder and come out and slang the fucking ball because he's a big dude and he's fast.
He was
like
running people over.
Oh, yeah. I wanted to see him do it. And it was almost as if he was defeated before the game. Like they handed him the script and he flipped to the back page and it said, you know, Tay-Tay and Travis drive off into the fucking sunset because he felt like, I mean, that initial first two series was so flat. It was almost like he knew he was going to get beat. And I was like, fuck, dude, this guy needs like a Brady-esque chip. Like the one thing I do love about Brady is no matter how many Super Bowls he won, he still came out with a chip on his shoulder. I mean, like, dude, one of my favorite, most petty moments of Brady was after they beat the Chiefs. They had that little like video of him and Gronk kind of like walking to the bus and they were both like, just kind of like talking shit, like he thought they were going to beat us, and we're still fucking here.
Yeah,
like
he's a man. Like that guy when he won, when he went to Tampa Bay and then won, you're just like, that is the most gangster move in the history in professional sports. Like no one leaves the as the franchise for 100 years at a place you've won five Super
six.
Bowls. He's won five there though, right?
Well, no, I thought
at Patriots.
Yeah, he won six at the Patriots.
Then won, Yeah. And then goes to
Tampa,
and then wins another. Like,
well, he put the band back together. He got Gronk out of there, and they brought in Fournette. I mean, they had like enough people showed up knowing that, hey, we're going to go fucking win this thing. And he, dude, he slang it.
Yeah.
I mean, he, like, I know that people give him a bad time. I was like reading some of the feedback on him as a, you know, color guy on the announcing deal. And I'm like, I feel like this is still Brady's hate. Is he as great? No, but like give him time. He'll be fine. And like that guy has such an incredible understanding of the game and such a good, I mean, and I was fortunate to play with him and he's a good fucking dude and I liked playing for him.
That doesn't surprise me at all. He's a Bay Area boy too.
Yeah. I went to school with his sister.
Oh, really?
Yeah. So his sister went to Cal and she was in a bunch of my classes. So and I know Tom obviously socially through Tony Gonzalez and also Runyon because he played at Michigan. So always a great dude. And I'm, I know he catches a lot of hate, but I feel like in the NFL, you have to have a bad guy. And for the longest time, like the Patriots, the cheating and this, and it was Deflategate. And, you know, what people don't bring up, I always felt that Deflategate was kind of the way that they shamed the Patriots after Kraft got busted in that prostitution ring.
I mean, he got caught getting a fucking handy in a massage parlor.
Yeah. And what's hilarious is that place was under surveillance for human trafficking. And his security let him go in there, which means they let him go into an active sting.
So his security didn't know, did they?
Well, dude, his security is all ex-FBI guys.
So they should have known.
So they fucking hire, like the reason that they have FBI and like government dudes come in and do all the security is so that they don't walk into a situation like that, like an FBI sting. Like somebody doesn't call ahead of time. It's like, hey, yo, dude, get your fucking ass out of there.
And it's Robert Kraft. What the fuck are you doing in a massage parlor?
He shows up to in a limo.
Dude, go to a fucking hotel and get a $5,000 an hour chick to come hang out with you.
And so he goes in there, he gets busted, and then that whole thing happens. And I felt like they had to like punish the Patriots and punish him. And I felt like that was some of the Deflategate shit. Because are you telling me that the reason that Tom Brady won is because the PSI on the ball was off?
You're telling me the refs who touched the ball between every single play, they never noticed like this doesn't feel right.
Okay, so what? It just is a little bit softer. I mean, it's, but
makes it easier to catch if it's softer. But like,
by how much?
That's what I'm saying. Like, the literally the refs have the ball between every single play. How much softer could it possibly be?
And there's ball boys, so he would have, and they were constantly moving balls in and out, so he would have had to be multiple balls. Mm-hmm. It just was bullshit. But I felt like they were after Robert Kraft for a little bit, and I understand why. So my favorite Robert Kraft story was I'm in training camp. It's at the end of training camp. We're like, you know, going through. I remember we had a late practice or whatever. And so, you know, my family doesn't live out there. I got nobody. I'm staying in a hotel. So I was just kind of fucking around, watching TV, eating late. The meal was almost done. And so Kraft comes in, and there was a couple of rookies and me just kind of sitting at the tables. And this rookie's up, and I'm like sitting here, TV's there, and like the lunch is like the tables are like this. And so I can watch this rookie going over there, and he's basically like got a spoon and he's shoveling blueberries mm-hmm. in a bowl. And Kraft walks over to him and goes, "Any more blueberries?" He's like, no, I got the rest of them. I got the last ones. And he goes and just takes the bowl out of the kid's hand, like takes them in his mouth, throws them out, and just walks out. And as he walked out, he stopped and he looked around and turned off the TV.
Why?
Right? No, I swear to God. And so he like looked at me and like the other guy and gave us kind of a dirty look and just like took the remote, turned the TV off and walked out eating the blueberries. And so the rookie guy, the young guy comes back over to me, sits down. He's like, "Man, that old man fucking took my blueberries." I'm like, "Well, he's the owner. They're technically his blueberries."
Yeah.
And I was like, "Just welcome to the NFL, dude. You just got punked by the owner for some fucking blueberries." And then did you see that? He turned the fucking TVs off on us. Like, I'm not letting you bums fucking watch TV. And that's my favorite Robert Kraft. So, sorry. And then when he got popped, and I was like, dude, so in Philly, I'll give you an example. In Philly, we went to this, they were filming a movie. And it was like a gangster movie. And it had that Chaz Palmieri guy that was in Bronx Tale.
Yeah.
So they asked if we would come to this kind of restaurant and be in the movie. So Runyon and I go down and we're at the bar having drinks. And the Chaz walks in. He's like, "Ah, the Eagles are here." And we're like, "Hey." And like, you know, like the deal.
Yeah.
So we end up going to this place. And then Butch, who was the director of security for Andy and for the Eagles, calls us in. And he's like, "Hey, just letting you know that's a wise guy place. Like they filmed that on location, but like
that's an actual wise guy place."
Yeah, it's an actual wise guy place. Like that's like gangsters go there. So don't make any plans to go back there. Just to tell you, because the guy was like, "Come back anytime. We'd love to seat you and this and this." He's like, "Go somewhere else."
Philly, right?
Yes, Philly.
Yeah.
And so sure enough, he like tells us, he's like, "Just don't go back. I know they
may as well have guaranteed you were going back."
Yeah. At that point.
Yeah.
So there was just like the reason that the security guys do what they do is because they're plugged into shit like that. They're like into the city. I mean, you know, that deal. So Kraft's guys had to be, you know, they hire FBI guys, they hire government guys, they hire guys that do this shit for a living so they don't walk into that. And then they let them walk into that.
Was he, what city was he in when that happened?
I think it was somewhere in Florida.
That's so bizarre.
Super bizarre.
And it's, but again, it's also very bizarre. So Florida somewhere like,
yeah.
What? So I'm trying to connect the dots between punks the dude for the blueberries and shuts off the TV. Like that's a very big indicator of personality. And I think there's a connection there to massage parlor. Like he wants to fucking peasant people. He's like, "Come here, peasant.
Yeah.
Why don't you go put your hands on me and then put your hands on this, you fucking peasant."
Yes.
And then like peasant the fucking blueberries, shut off the TV. Because what other possible, dude, the difference between spending $200 or $300 at Asian massage parlor, $3,000 or $5,000 for an absolute dime piece not anything.
He probably wanted it dirty.
He wanted it dirty. He wanted to peasant them.
And then the hilarious part is he used to rock what they called like the, what was it? It was like the Boston uniform or no, what was it? It was like the, what was it? Oh yeah. The Martha Vineyards, like basic uniform. He was like blue blazer, white shirt, mm-hmm. khakis and brown shoes. And he rocked that thing and he came in all the time with it. Like he needed an ascot, but I mean, he was
underneath the suit.
Yeah.
He's a dirty boy.
Well, I think his wife passed away from cancer and I think he's now remarried to like a 20-something-year-old chick. So he probably had to clean that up after getting popped in a fucking, getting a handy at a massage parlor.
Dude,
the stealing of the blueberries. When there are people like, "Oh, did you meet Robert Kraft?" I'm like, numerous times. Let me tell you my favorite Kraft story about when he punked this kid for blueberries.
What years were you on the Patriots?
Just 2008. So yeah, so I came in there, they signed me, and then I got hurt in the last preseason game.
Yeah.
Ended up getting released, and then they asked me to stick around to re-sign me the next day because they made a roster move, which is still a weird deal. when they went to re-sign me, put me back through the physical and figured out that I'd fucked up my knee in that last preseason game. Mm. And then they didn't re-sign me, came home and had surgery. Mm. And then as I was rehabbing and teams were calling and whatnot, like my knee just wasn't feeling better. And ended up, it took a whole year for my knee to feel better. And at that point I had played, that was year 10, got hurt, and year 11 was all kind of dicey. So I decided that was probably 10 years was good.
Yeah. Yeah. That's my brother had the same type of deal in his career. He had some kind of hernia surgery. And then, if people have a long career, it seems like an injury is usually the thing that does it. For at least in my experience, I don't know like a million players, but like it seems like that's what happens a lot. Not necessarily in the UFC though. In the UFC, you get your brains beat in a few too many times, and then it's like, man, dude, it's like it's unbelievable the consistency that people's career trajectory kind of goes at the end. You know, where it's like they'll have it happens so fast in UFC where guys are like, this guy's in this fight, the winner gets a title shot, everything's going great, and then like guy breaks his ankle on a leg kick. Looked great, broke his ankle. He's out for 10 months, comes back, looks a little slower, loses the next fight. Now he's on a 2-fight skid. And then you're like, man, he's really up against the wall. Then he loses the next one. He's down 3 fights in a row. 15 months ago, he has the world by the fucking balls and he's about to be in a title fight. And then 15 months later, it's like, man, this guy should probably retire. And I don't know. It's like, it's hard to watch, man. A lot of times. Cause like at least guys who have a long career in Major League Baseball, NFL, NBA have made enough money to where when it comes, if they've been smart, they kind of cruise off into a part of their life that's not going to be super challenging financially, at least if they were smart.
Sure.
With UFC fighters, it is incredibly rare that guys have made enough money for that to be the case.
Who, like, Conor McGregor is the only one I can think of.
There are other guys, George St. Pierre's made plenty of money, Khabib and guys like that. And there are other guys. I mean, Kamaru Usman, if guys who have won a bunch of title fights equal millions of dollars each time. Sometimes actually some guys never have a good manager negotiate their contracts, but even the guys, if they make $4 million over their career, they're going to spend that, dude. Yeah. It's not, people here, $4 million. I think that's a lot. It's not a lot of fucking money. No. After managers, taxes, whatever. And then they're going to live like they're a person who makes that money. They're going to spend it.
Well, and on top of it, it's not like, at least, I get to the NFL, I got the luxury of going to college and getting degrees.
Yeah.
And, you have a skill set, whereas a lot of these guys don't have any of that. Like this is all they got. This is their 8-mile moment.
They think you can just do whatever you want forever and that money will last forever. You're like, nah, dude, like, just look at this is just one fucking trip that you know about. Like, just start counting that up. Look at his staff. Look at this. He's spending millions of dollars.
Cars and upkeep and houses.
Security.
And security.
And all that. It's
private
just,
jets.
Exactly. Like, Justin Bieber right now is apparently struggling for money and everyone's all, what the fuck? He sold his entire,
catalog life. For $200
million. Dude, he fucking probably ripped through it, dude. In 4 years, like just spending like a lunatic doing private jets and all this stuff and everything. It's like, I don't know. What percentage of people that play in the league for like six, seven years after their career have money?
I think most guys are broke within the first couple of years.
Man, that's
because horrible. The problem is you have to adjust your spending.
Yeah.
Right? Like, so for me, what I did is, and this is, I don't recommend this, but like when I retired, like that was all gone. Like I just basically just put a shelf on a moratorium. Like that's the cash that I made. Like that's my life at a different time. Now we start at zero. Mm-hmm. And I was fortunate. I mean, I did own a home, but like I started working. That first year when I was teaching CrossFit football stuff and traveling for CrossFit, I taught 36 seminars around the globe. We launched a website and had, 17,000 hits.
So you just pretended like you didn't even have this money.
Yes.
Yeah. That's a smart thing.
Yeah. I mean, like, so for me, other than my mortgage, I've never had, car payments and this. If I don't have it in my pocket, I don't buy it.
Yeah.
And so, we were, pretty lucky in that I had a, fairly decent house, sold it and bought another one and this and just try to live within your means.
Yeah.
And, figure out exactly like how much you can make, what you can live on and this. And you almost have to like put that thing in the past and realize like, hey, I can only live off of what I end up producing and what I end up making.
Yeah.
And that, when I start going back and dipping into that money, then, when my financial guy shows up and, retirement, and this is what retirement looks like, then you're like, oh, great. Oh yeah. And I kind of forget about it. And then he shows up a couple times a year and we go through everything and I'm always like, oh, all right, I feel better about myself. Mm-hmm. And, we've been very fortunate to, run a business and be able to, do things like this. And, you know, be able to create some stuff. So, but I think for a lot of guys, they just don't have the either desire or the ability, or maybe they don't feel like they can. A lot of guys that I had former teammates just, you know, like one of the best jobs you can do is if you can get on one of the sports desks. Like, you know, you can work for the NFL. I mean, the one that Tony Gonzalez has for, you know, Amazon and for, you know, what those do, fucking honeypot jobs.
I'm sorry, did you say Amazon?
Yeah, so Amazon.
You know that Bezos' girl is his ex-wife.
Well, you know, I was best man at Tony's wedding.
Get the fuck out. To her?
No.
Oh.
No, so Tony dated Lauren Sanchez, and they have a son together.
That's who I'm talking about.
Yeah, Nico.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, you remember Tony played at Cal.
Yeah. Oh, yeah that's right.
Yeah. Yeah, and then we played against Kansas City. Like, I was Tony's running mate, and we were in KC.
Incredible
and
player.
Then, yeah, I mean, one of the best careers ever. Mm-hmm. But then he and, you know, Toby get married, who is his current wife. And, yeah, I mean, so that was, I mean, shit, we had a small wedding, Tony and Toby, we were at ours. So, but, like, so then Lauren ends up...
EMI.
She was married to this big Hollywood dude.
The EMI, that's what I'm saying, yeah.
And then her, and she becomes the other woman in the Jeff Bezos thing.
Bro, that
and
story.
Then fucking, you know, so I mean, I remember last time when I was at Tony's Hall of Fame, I saw Nico, who I have known since a little boy. And I'm like, Nico. And I'm like, man, how's life? He's like, it's really good. You know, we hang out with Bezos a lot. And I'm like, dude.
Yeah, you're.
I was like, this has to be a killer life. And I always joked, I joked with him when I saw him, like, hey, man, you know, this isn't the real life. He's like, my dad tells me all the time.
Yeah.
And
he said, Jeff's cool. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Jeff, of all those guys, so seems like
he'd be fun to
hang out with.
Oh, yeah. So we were at Tony's Hall of Fame after the after party. I walk in early and I see Michael Strahan. I hadn't seen Strahan in years, so wherever they're just fucking bullshitting. And Lauren comes over and she's like, Michael. And then she didn't remember me, but I was like, oh, Lauren, I'm Tony's friend. We met. Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. Meet my boyfriend, Jeff. And I turn and it's fucking Jeff Bezos.
How tall is he?
Obviously much shorter than myself and Michael Strahan, but but the hilarious part is I kind of like glanced up, imagining there were fucking drones following him. There was no security around him. And I'm over there and I'm like, hey, Jeff. He's like, hey, how's it going?
Oh, there's security around.
Oh, I don't know where they were, if they were melted into the walls in camouflage.
Yeah.
But it was great to see her. And he was super nice. I wish I'd slipped in my car and be like, man, I'd love to get you on my podcast.
Yeah.
But Nico was like, life's good.
Yeah.
So, so Tony's got, you know, now, you know, Lauren and Jeff and then Toby and Tony hang out. And
that's cool. That's what my parents are like. Divorce, new people and hang out. Like we go on trips together.
Well, Tony was never married to Lauren.
Oh, he was?
No.
I thought they were married.
No. They were just boyfriend, girlfriend. They dated, and then she got pregnant with Nico, and then they just co-parented. And then, you know,
was married to that other, the Hollywood guy.
To the Hollywood guy. And now with the Bezos thing.
It is literally, she is the queen bee of social climbing with dudes. Like, Tony, probably in the conversation for the greatest tight end of all time, to the guy who owned the biggest talent agency in Hollywood, to fucking Jeff Bezos. The story about her and Bezos is so fucking wild, dude. Like, so I don't know how close you paid attention to this, but I only did just because, like, I talk about it on the channel.
Yeah.
Bezos is getting a divorce. And it's like, Bezos getting a divorce seems like such a, you know, down-home dude. He's been together with her forever. And it's like, well, there are some pictures floating around of Bezos naked. And it turns out that he was having an affair. And I'm like, naked picture of Bezos? I didn't look him up, but I'm like, that's fucked. I started reading that Bezos was doing, like, you know, he hires like the most deep state, like private security group. They're like, find out how this happened. And he's like, we think that it was the Saudi Arabian government. He thought Saudi Arabian government had hacked his stuff because of some deal that they had been doing.
Sounds about right.
Turns out that the way that the pictures came out was Lauren Sanchez's brother leaked them. And you were like, Lauren Sanchez's brother? And you're like, wait a minute. And you're like, so the way Bezos's wife found out he's having an affair with Sanchez is Sanchez's brother leaked the pictures.
Genius.
And now she's together with him. I'm like, that's some fucking CIA level brilliant split up the marriage. And let me take that fucking richest guy in the world off your hands.
And then he made his ex-wife the richest woman on the planet.
Yeah. And then she went and I think she married a school teacher and then left him. But yeah. Guy. And then she's, I guess she likes publicity because, you know, she to the inauguration, she wore that outfit that anyone knew that they're going to sit, you know, they're going to be like, what is she wearing at this thing?
Then you got Zuckerberg looking down the front of her dress.
So funny.
So, dude, did you hear about the Zuckerberg not conspiracy, but like what changed Zuckerberg, because he was like a lizard person.
I think jiu-jitsu did it.
No, you know what they think it happened?
Huh?
He got on TRT.
Oh, that too. Yeah, yeah.
So what they were talking about, he got injured. Mm-hmm. You know what it was like. Whatever.
Oh, I didn't know that. Yeah.
So something happened.
Oh, when he from training.
Yeah. So he starts doing the MMA stuff and like, you know, kind of got into it. And I really think the reason he got into MMA and started doing jits was they had asked him to go on Joe Rogan. And he didn't want to go on Joe Rogan and appear to be a Martian. Like, he wanted to be like one of the guys.
A human.
Yeah. Oh, I guarantee it. Because like Zuckerberg, one of my other favorite stories about him, he meets, you know, the premier of China. Was it?
She.
And tells him, I'm going to name one of our children after you. Right. Like, he's playing long game. Like, this guy is a smart dude.
Yeah.
So I think they've been on him for years because Rogan brought up, like, we got to get Zuckerberg on here. Yeah. It'd be great to have him on. So I think his people like probably got a focus group and they were like, okay, how do you look like a bro? Because if Joe Rogan anoints you as a bro, like you're an all right dude, the world's going to think you're an all right guy.
Yeah.
And for the most part, you're not.
Yeah.
So the focus group probably came back and they were like, MMA, jiu-jitsu, you're going to have to start doing it because he likes it.
Yeah.
So I think he starts training, he gets hurt. And I think what they did is they sped up his recovery and they gave him some TRT. And all of a sudden he had a high test level. Next thing you know, he starts eating meat. He starts lifting weights.
He starts hunting.
He starts doing all these. Yeah. He gets into surfing, goes and buys that big ass surfing spot and then hires, Kai Lenny and his crew to teach him how to big wave surf.
That's fucking awesome.
Right? Like, hired those dudes as like Facebook fucking employees. And like, he buys the best surf spot in Maui and then hires Kai Lenny and these guys who are like the biggest wave surfers in the world.
He's doing all this stuff.
I was a billionaire. Yeah. I would have Kai Lenny teach me to big wave surf. Sure. Dave Camarillo. I mean, dude, he's like, he's walking out, Volkanovski.
Yeah.
I mean, but they think what happened was he actually got some testosterone in his body, started eating meat. And next thing you know, he's on Joe Rogan and he's actually kind of a bro.
Dude, I'm saying if you want to be a thing, pretend to be that thing long enough and you will become that thing.
Yeah. And now he's got like broccoli hair. He's wearing a chain, black shirt.
Yep.
He's over there lifting weights.
4th of July, he's wake skating and he's got the
American flag
in a tuxedo. I was like, I don't care if he's faking. I'm in, dude.
Yeah. I mean, he was on Rogan and there's a pretty good podcast where they went and fact checked everything he said. And it's all fucking bullshit. He's just,
which stuff?
He talked about how they started kind of pulling back a little bit on some of like the freedom of speech stuff.
And then
they put like some government agency, there's some banking and he didn't know why. Well, yeah, because Facebook tried to have their own cryptocurrency. Like, don't you remember when Facebook was trying to do their own currency? So like, there were some things that he made that like, I was like, yeah, do you remember? There was like in 2017, they tried to do their own currency.
That would have been smart.
Yeah, would have been smart. But like, and then he was talking about like, oh, you know, the Biden administration was pressuring us. You're a private business. You can tell these people to go fuck themselves.
Yeah.
And you were still giving them back doors. So I think that he now sees this political landscape changing where now it's like, you know, Trump and Rogan and these guys. And he's a smart dude,
fucking
man.
Fucking pick the right team just in time.
Yeah.
Dude, did you see today that Trump had the CIA offer buyouts to every single employee at the CIA? All of them. Every single one of them offered an 8-month buyout to every employee at CIA. So they're like, you can just walk right now, have 8 months pay. Initially, I thought that meant that they were like firing the entire CIA because that's usually what it sounds like. I think it's a
way for them to get rid of the people they don't want.
And they're also just like, this whole like what you guys did last time, undermine, this is not going to work. So you can just walk right now or you're on this fucking ship, you know?
Yeah.
Because I don't think he's going to fire 21,000 fucking CIA people.
No.
But
like the Zuckerberg thing is hilarious. But
he's a
dude.
He's doing it right.
Yeah, as he should. I mean, fuck, dude. I would buy that. He built a bunker, which is awesome. I hope he's got dope barbecues. But he even posted a picture. He was cooking on a big green egg. I cook on a big green egg. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, I'm not mad at him.
No.
You know? Yeah. But so he
bow hunts.
Maybe.
Says he bow hunts.
I think he threw that thing out there. Like, I think he was...
Rogan asked him what kind of bow he has. He's all, I'm not sure.
Yeah, and he's like, yeah, we're sitting in a stand. And Rogan's like, what are you talking about? It's really hard work. You got to go. I mean, he might have shot a bow from maybe a stand. Like a bow.
Yeah, he's probably shooting a bow from like a deer blind.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. He's not Cameron Haynes-ing that shit, running across fucking America trying to chase elk down and like Joe Rogan and those guys.
Steve at Jared's place, like I went with Steve and he's like, I just want to bring a rifle and just walk in this place and go hunt. I was like, that sounds pretty fucking awesome.
Yeah.
I've never done that. I've never bow hunted before. Have you?
Mm-hmm. I've never killed a whitetail. I've never killed like a big, like I've only ever shot turkeys with a bow. Mm. So we used to bow hunt turkeys and, but I've never, even though I've gone bow hunting for whitetail, I've never killed a whitetail with a bow.
You gotta get pretty fucking close, right?
Well, or, you know, so I had a conversation with my buddy Casey from Tacticalories about this the other day. He's from New York. Mm-hmm. And one of like the no-nos up there in the Northeast where they are is you don't hunt feeders. So where the feeders are, you just set up and you got to hunt and stalk and do this. Texas is like people hunt feeders.
All
like,
day.
Like that's part of the deal in Texas. So there's places
with
like,
rifles.
Yeah, with rifles. Mm-hmm. All right. So you're not like, it's kind of an ethically weird deal to like set up a feeder and just go out and fucking blast them. And I get that. But that's how they hunt in Texas. So like, I'm not mad at it, but I've set up on my tree stand, you know, within 40 yards of that feeder. And for those days that I've been out there, I've never in my life fucking killed one. So when I went elk hunting in California a bunch of years ago, we were going to bow hunt these things and we chased those elk through the mountains for 3 days. And like, it would be like, we'd hear them call like here and we took off running this way. And like 2 hours later, they're like 2 miles past us. Like we couldn't get within fucking a half a mile of these things.
Yeah.
So then finally on the fourth day, the guy's like, whoa, fuck dude. Like you got to get this thing. And we only got so much time. So I pulled out the rifle and ended up shooting it, but I still shot it at like, you know, 300-400 yards, you know, 300 Win Mag off of sticks. I mean, fuck, it was, there was no way I was going to be able to get anywhere near these things in bow hunting.
Yeah.
So, but I do have a ton of respect for people that do bow hunt that. But yeah, I just haven't.
It's actually totally different skill set. It seems like you have to have a, like a straight up tracker skill set to be able to move that quiet. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
Cause well, if deer know you're there, they're well, not
like,
there.
Yeah. I mean, the deer hunting's pretty hard just because the deer are so, wired up to like be nervous of anything. So that's kind of where you got to hunt from a stand. But I know like Bert Soren and those guys, like they hunt, they go out to, you know, big mule deer, big elk and all that stuff in New Mexico. So, I did invite you on here as a Super Bowl pre-edition for this being the Super Bowl podcast. Obviously, the Kansas City Chiefs are playing the Philadelphia Eagles. We were talking a little bit about the stories that went through, and more importantly, it just feels like everything is the Eagles are the bad guys because they cheat. The refs are helping them. Taylor Swift, Travis Kelce, and Saquon Barkley finally getting redemption. Chiefs or Eagles?
I think Chiefs because everybody wants the Eagles to win, and you know, that's just the way it goes. Honestly, when I watched the AFC and NFC championship game, here was my, here's my read is like the Chiefs are like a fucking slow moving. Like they never get rattled to momentum. It doesn't seem like if another team does something big, that's going to rattle another team. They're just like, whatever. They just keep on moving forward, moving forward. The Eagles are more of like a breakout momentum type team. And Saquon is unbelievable. But if you could shut that one thing down,
yeah,
They're going to have a really rough time, and I just think KC is going to kind of slowly roll them over.
In the NFL will always bet and always ride with who's been there before.
Yeah.
If you have, let's say, a young guy who's looking pretty good, but you have a veteran who's been there before, he's been reliable, he's played at high levels, he's been in big games, he hasn't been rattled, they'll always be like, we'll take the veteran. Mm-hmm. And unless the money's way upside down, then they'll bet on the young guy. But I think in terms of like the Chiefs having been there 3 years in a row, like they win these games.
They've won 3 of 5.
Yeah, they won all of these. I mean, the only person to beat him was Brady beat him, and what was the other one that beat him?
Fuck, I don't know.
Joe Burrow beat him in the AFC.
Yes, yeah, that's right. That's right. So Burrow and Brady had beat him. Two pretty good fucking quarterbacks. I just don't think that the Eagles, even though they were there 2 years ago, I think they got a lot of young dudes. They're going to be excited by going to the Super Bowl. They're going to maybe like the glitz and the glamour, the fact that Taylor Swift's in the audience, who knows, whatever it is. The energy in the stadium has a very interesting way of like overwhelming people that haven't been there before. The Eagles are going to go in there like this is just another day at work, and I think that that's going to be a massive help for them. Would it be nice to see some somebody like the Eagles come in and win just to see, like, you know, to add a little balance back to the force and to give somebody else. And that Saquon Barkley would be just such an amazing story to have him come in and win after, you know, they were like, you know, we're not paying this fucking guy this money. And he goes down the road and ends up almost having 3,000 yards and has been crushing it.
So 450 yards in the last three games.
It'd be nice to see them doing it. I just wouldn't bet my money on people that are new. I think in the NFL, you go with who's been there before. So why would it be nice to see a competitive game? That's all I ever hope for.
Yeah. Well, did Philly, how much did he get paid big at the Eagles?
I think he got like 3 years, $29 million. So he got just shy of $10 million a year, and I guarantee he had incentives that if he goes to a Super Bowl and does all this and, you know, sets the right. I mean, I guarantee he had a nice incentive-laden contract, so he's going to cash in on what he's done.
That's good.
So, and, you know, and like, the most destitute people on the planet are Philly fans. So I kind of root for them just to give them a win, and it'd be nice to do it because last time they won a Super Bowl was with Doug Peterson. So,
yeah.
And Jeffrey Lurie's not a bad guy.
Casey doesn't need a fucking another one either, dude.
Oh, well, the power of Clark Hunt and, you know, Gracie Hunt and all these people, man, they are, it's a fucking dynasty. I went to a game, they had an alumni game, Tom Bali, who I played with, ended up getting inducted in the Hall of Fame. So we took the kids to a game and went, and I mean, just the energy and the pageantry and everything has really stepped it up. And I will say this. However you want to look at the refs and all that other shit, I will tell you that the luck that these Chiefs have was a luck that we never had in Arrowhead. Like, they kicked the ball, it hit the upright and went in. They, like, all of a sudden, like, you know, a guy fucking goes to catch a ball, it hits him on his chest, the ball bounces up into another guy's hands for a touchdown. I was like, holy shit, like these guys are having an
amount of, on their side.
Like there's an amount of luck that didn't exist in this stadium when I played. When I played in Philly, we had that kind of luck. Like, there'd be like weird shit would just go our way, and we were like, yeah, we're fucking Eagles, we know. And so to see it at the Chiefs, I'm like, fuck, I wish I had played here that time.
Out of all the years you played, what's the best record regular season and worst record regular season for one of your teams?
I can't remember what it is. It would be at the Eagles, though, that year that we, I think we went 13-3.
Nice.
And yeah, we killed it. And then obviously, I think my first year at the Eagle, it'd probably be the Chiefs. I mean, we went to the playoffs one time. And then we went in and played against the Colts and just got absolutely fucking eviscerated by Peyton Manning and the Colts.
You made the playoffs all
no. So we went to the playoffs every year other than the first year I was in Philly. So my rookie year, we didn't make it, but we went the whole time I was in Philly. And then when I went to Kansas City, we only made the playoffs once in 4 years. And it was, we played in a wild card game against the Indianapolis Colts. And that was a really interesting game, to say the least. Willie Rofe, who was our starting left tackle, he gets hurt and he can't play. And so his backup, who was a good player, a guy named Jordan Black, goes in there to play left tackle against Dwight Freeney at home in the playoffs. And it was not a fucking good matchup. And it was, I played right tackle. All of a sudden, I'm standing there, like, we're in the huddle, and I see my backup come running on the field. And I'm like, what the fuck are you doing here? He comes and he goes, go to left tight end. And I'm like,
left tight end?
What the fuck are you talking about? He's like, go to left tight end. That's what they said.
So you guys could double up over there?
Yeah. And so I played right tackle. I had never practiced left tight end. So all of a sudden I got to go in and I'm like looking at our quarterback and he's like, left tight end, dude. They just called it in. I'm like, well, what do I do? He's like, well, you got to declare eligible. Right. So then he'd be like, all right, 76 declared eligible. And he's like, I just need you to stay in. And so I told the left tackle, I'm like, hey, dude, I'm going to take a step and I'm going to try to shoot a knockout blow on Dwight Freeney. Whatever direction he goes off of that knockout blow, I want you just to fucking tackle him. If you get a holding call, you get a holding call. So I like took a step, fucking just two handed him in the face. He went back and we just started just basically double teaming and tackling him. And then all of a sudden we were like the second series in and the quarterback's like, you got to run a route. I'm like, are you out of your fucking mind? My hands are casted. So like I would put on gloves and I would like tape. Like literally, like I was a boxer, mm-hmm. and I would like two-hand punch people. Like my hands are completely cast out. I can't even move my fingers, like punching. And he's like, you got to run. I'm like, don't throw me the fucking ball, dude. Sure. He's like, you got to be ready. And I literally ran out and ran a route. And like, dude, I was like, if they throw me the ball, I'm going to get absolutely fucking demolished. There's nothing out here for me. And yeah, we ended up losing that game, which sucked. And yeah.
What's it like? I mean, when you're on a team that goes 13-3, and you're, well, actually, yeah, like how, I mean, I know it's obviously extremely different, but like when you're on a team that you know is not going to make the playoffs and you still have four games left of the regular season, what's that like, dude?
It sucks.
Miserable?
Yeah, it's awful. You know, when you get mathematically eliminated early, you know, before, like, you know, it's good to, you know, go into the, you know, last run of the season and you're going in, you're still in the hunt, they're still not. If you got still like 3-4 games left, you've been mathematically like, dude, it's an awful existence.
Yeah.
Because at that point, you're just out there just playing, one, to not get hurt, and two, you know, you're out there playing to try to, like, help guys that are going into their contract year and playing at a high level. But it was really
against guys that are fighting for their lives for, and still in the hunt.
Well, yeah, I mean, and so when I played in Philadelphia, it was a lot of fun because we won a lot of games. I mean, like, everywhere we went, like, I remember we'd go to dinner on Thursday nights or Friday nights, and everywhere we walked in, like, they fucking sat you at the best table. You never paid a bill. You never bought a drink. Mm-hmm. And then when I went to Kansas City, all of a sudden we're like, went out to dinner with some guys. They brought us over the bill, and I was like, you guys pay for fucking dinner? I haven't bought a fucking meal in years. Like, we'd go into places and they'd be like, your money's no good here. I'm like, just tip the service. And so it just was very interesting in those days. Like, I'm sure it's much different now in Kansas City. Yeah. I mean, those guys are like rock stars now. Yeah. But you could tell when you play for an organization that's winning, it's pretty electric. Yeah. It's fun. The food is better. The attitude is better. Everybody's happier.
Everybody's so grateful.
Oh, my God.
It gives them a reason to live.
Yeah, it does. Yeah. And it's great. So, I mean, it's going to be a good one. I'm stoked for it. And hopefully we have a good game.
I'm excited, man.
So if people want to catch up with you, or like, what is it? Jesse on Fire.
Jesse on Fire on YouTube. I'm on Instagram and X, which is much less active, but I'm real Jesse on Fire on YouTube. Jesse on Fire.
Yeah. So if you want to check him out, and this was Super Bowl edition. Thanks for tuning in another episode of Power Athlete Radio.
Let's go.
Hey there, Power Athlete Nation. Big shout out to all the heavy hitters who stuck around till the final whistle. If you've been soaking in the knowledge bombs and epic tales we've been dropping for free, here's your chance to be a game changer. Swing by klfi.com/powerathlete and toss a few bucks our way to keep the podcast fueled and firing on all cylinders. That's ko-fi.com/powerathlete. Your support makes a difference. See ya.
Taxes was taxing. Now taxes is relaxing when you file for free.
I can file for free? TurboTax Free Edition. Roughly 37% of filers qualify. Simple form 1040 returns only. See if you qualify at TurboTax.com/free. I can file for free.
Now this is taxes. File for free with TurboTax Free Edition and get your maximum refund. No schedules except for earned income tax credit, child tax credit, and student loan interest. See if you qualify at TurboTax.com/free.